You're listening to the Cannabis Investing Network. Before we begin, a short disclaimer. The full disclaimer follows at the end of this episode. This podcast is a general communication and is being provided for entertainment and information purposes only. It is educational in nature and is not designed to be a recommendation for any specific investment strategy, plan, feature, or other purpose. Please enjoy responsibly. Hello and welcome back to the Cannabis Investing Network podcast. My name is Manish. Welcome everybody to 2020. This is our first actual being recorded in 2022. You can see I'm still on vacation brain over here.
Yeah, yeah. You went back in time.
Welcome back to 2020.
No. January 2020. Your brain's still trying to process it emotionally.
That's right. I'm still not over what happened in Jan of 2020. Yeah. Welcome, everybody, to 2022. Here with our number one fact checker himself, Abby.
How's it going, buddy? How's it going?
No complaints, man. It's nice to be chatting again.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. For sure. It's minus 20 degrees weather out here in Toronto.
Uh-huh. And we're locked away safely in our respective homes. Happy New Year. How was your break?
It was lovely. It was lovely. I got to go away for a little bit, got to see the family, got to recharge and put some thought into cannabis. Mm-hmm. How about yourself?
Yeah, you got to map out all the new ways you're going to lose money this year.
Yeah, and there's tons of ways. You would be surprised. Things I didn't even know existed.
We're going to make new ways this year. Last year we learned about SPACs, and that was it.
I forgot about that boom.
There's that old quote. I can't remember who said, I think it's a Warren Buffett quote, but I don't know why Wall Street spends so much time figuring up new ways to lose money when the old ways work just fine.
That's true, man. Cannabis gives Wall Street a run for its money for sure in that regard.
That's true. So here we are. It's the start of 2022. I thought it would be a great time to do a market update because, you know, we actually haven't done an episode live or recorded one in about a month. And there's a good amount to talk about. So, you know, we're going to be talking about, you know, the industry trends at large. We're going to be talking about, you know, COVID and stimulus and how that plays into, you know, general investing, the Fed and rising interest rates, which I think should be the number one sort of macro thing that's on investors' mind. Our friend and political correspondent, JP, had a great piece recently on the outlook for safe banking that we'll talk about. MSOS, you know, the largest and the most important buyer in our industry and where they're at. We're going to talk about Ascend and MedMen New York and kind of what we think about that. We're going to talk about a short report on a company called AgriFi and just give you the overall view, high level view on where we are for what has been a very interesting 2 week start to the new year.
Mm-hmm. It sounds very exciting.
And Abby, the headline for today, the name of the episode really comes from an article that came out this week, which was called Nothing Has Changed. And the idea basically was, look, when it comes to federal reform, people are getting upset and frustrated because nothing has changed. Right. It's all kind of similar to how it was, you know, a year or so ago. And I think that's a good place to start from because, you know, where we are today to where we sort of ended the year, that's how I feel. I feel like nothing has changed. It's sort of business as usual. And on the one hand, that's not particularly exciting for the industry. It's kind of boring, you know, to Abby and I were talking before, and that's how I felt about, you know, being at the recent conference and talking to companies is like, it's kind of the same as it was a few months ago. There's nothing that's really exciting us as investors. But that's not necessarily bad either, right? That fact that nothing has changed, a lot of the things that were true at the end of the year are still true in terms of the outlook of these companies and you know, sort of the positive growth aspects. But it can be a bit frustrating or boring to feel like nothing new is happening.
Yeah, I think boring is the right word. Frustrating, it depends on how far you want to go back and if you're talking specifically about the legalization. But for me, boring makes sense. And, you know, in the defense of the sector, not that much time has passed, right, since like, you know, since last year.
Even MJ Biz, yeah.
Yeah, there hasn't been much. And, you know, we've been a little, I don't want to say spoiled, but in the cannabis sector, you know, we used to say like a week feels like a year. right? Because so much used to happen so frequently. Mm-hmm. And a lot of market events would ripple and you would see, you know, meaningful movement in the markets. We're just not seeing that right now. Mm-hmm. Right. And there could be plenty of reasons for it. But, you know, we'll get into it as we start to talk more and more into it. But
well, let's get into that, because you mentioned something before that I think is worth talking about, which was about Germany.
Yeah, absolutely. So two things. So one, Germany potentially legalizing weed, or they're saying that they are going to legalize weed. I thought if this was in 2018, let's say that happened, or 2019, mm-hmm. you know, that would be, the markets would have gone gangbusters. Obviously, we're not there anymore. I mean, you know, your mind is still at 2020, Manish, but but you know, the market's not there. And I thought that the response from the market was a little too muted.
Right.
Like only, you know, maybe Tilray moved. That's about it. And then I think you mentioned that IMCC moved as well. Mm-hmm. But like, it wasn't that like MSOS went up, which is, you know, I know it's, I know MSOS is supposed to be for MSOs, but it's kind of our barometer for the entire sector. Sure. Mm-hmm. That didn't really, you know, spike up like crazy. It wasn't like, you know, my mom wasn't calling me being like, hey, like, did you hear this happen? Like it kind of just stuck within the cannabis crowd. Right. And there was another event that occurred recently as well, where Colombia, I don't know if they mandated, but they're making it so that insurance companies cover CBD, right? Okay. And that is pretty meaningful, right? Because you remember, Colombia was a very topical story when cannabis first started. It was going to be where everything was cultivated and things were going to ship over to Germany. Those are two of the companies that, if you remember the very first pitch decks, were always – countries in the very first pitch decks that we would see that were always mentioned. And they had two, I would say, significant movements, right? Mm-hmm. Legalization and then insurance, right? You don't really see that. Imagine if the US had that, but it didn't really move the market. And I was a little disappointed.
Mm-hmm. And I think it goes to something else you were saying about sort of knowing what stage of the cycle that you're in.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's actually somebody you quote a lot. It's Howard Marks, and he always talks about being cognizant of where you are in a market cycle. It's impossible to know where you are until you look back and you say, okay, well, this is where we were, mm-hmm. right? But he also says there's ways that you can sort of look for clues that kind of give you indications of where you potentially could be, right? And, you know, all I can take from those two events that occurred is that we're no longer in the early days, right? It doesn't take a genius to figure that out. But I think that solidifies that, you know, we're no longer in the early days. It's no longer fluff news that's really going to move this market. So I was thinking, like, you know, what's going to move this market now?
Right. So just to sort of build on what you just said, I think it's important to note when it comes to, like, especially cannabis, we're not in the super frothy speculative phase of the market, right? Mm-hmm. We're not at that point where a little bit of news on Germany or Colombia just rips all these stocks. You know, similarly, actually, we saw the COVID and cannabis study resurface. If you remember, actually, this the first iteration of the study was mid-2020 in the pandemic where it came out. It has to do with the fact that it's not about smoking a joint, by the way. It's about CBD and CBG, and mostly I think the studies on CBD can help prevent COVID cells, essentially, or help stop the virus from binding to your cells. But the interesting thing is you take a lot of CBD, apparently it helps you prevent getting COVID. So that actually came out in 2020 and was a hot news piece for a little bit and then faded away. And then it just came back again, right? And it's like, it just perfectly encapsulate for me, Abby, this idea of nothing's changed, but the way the news cycle works and the way people's brains work, this is essentially brand new news to people, right? So mm-hmm. when we ask kind of what is the catalyst that gets the mainstream focus back on this sector, I don't know, right? I don't know what it is. I don't know when it comes. But I think the interesting thing is it's hard to predict what it is, but sometimes it can happen in a way that you might not see coming, right? Like the Nancy Mace bill, stuff that you just did not account for, did not plan for, ends up bringing a lot of eyeballs to the space. And sometimes it can be something that's a little bit silly, right? Like this study that's been around for over 2 years. And that, by the way, people are getting wrong, right? People are capturing or seeing this headline and saying, hey, if you smoke weed, you won't get cannabis, you won't get COVID.
COVID, yeah.
Right? But it has to do with CBD, not has to do with, you know, people, that's lost in translation a lot of times.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So to your point, Abby, like what's going to get people excited again? I don't know. But I would also say that it's often hard to figure out what is going to catch mainstream attention to get us back in the spotlight.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And you know, I was thinking more and more over the break of like, you know, what does the sector really need mm-hmm. from an investment perspective to get back positive returns or, you know, just better returns in general. And it's, we need more capital, right? We need more capital sure. coming into it. All to oversimplification, I really feel like that would solve a lot of our problems. But how do you get that capital? Mm-hmm. Right. And, anyways, that kind of goes back into the fact that, well, nothing's really changed. So there's not really a need right now for that capital to sort of come in. And so anyways, it's just something
there's
that
not a better way to get it. Basically there's a yeah. need, but there's not some magic source of money that showed up over the last 2 weeks
exactly.
to pour money in. Right.
There's no new path to losing money. Yet. Yeah.
I'm sure we'll figure it out maybe in this episode. So I think it's a good place to stop there and talk about for a second what I think should be the most interesting thing on investors' minds as we go into 2022, which is the Fed raising rates. And, you know, I think for more novice investors, this might be harder to understand. Certainly as a real estate person, like I've lived through this, you know, being front and center, interest rates in the world of investing are like gravity. So it's inverse basically. So when you want to stimulate the markets, you turn interest rates down, right? And if you turn the gravity down, then everything floats up, right? So, you know, in 2020, when COVID hit and it looked like the entire financial system was going to melt down, and people really forget now, right, what a good job the Fed did at getting people back on regular behavior and getting them to take risk at a time when people, including myself, were extraordinarily risk adverse. What we saw was, you know, that old saying, don't fight the Fed. When the mm-hmm. Fed wants to pour billions of dollars, trillions of dollars onto the market to make it move, they will accomplish their goal, right? You do not want to stand in front of that freight train.
Yeah.
Right. And that's what they did, right? And now our biggest problem is not employment. Our biggest problem is inflation. Mm-hmm. And so now they're very clearly saying to the market, 3 to 4 rate hikes this year, another 3 to 4 to come. And the same way it was like, don't fight the Fed when they're pushing things up. Now it's going the other way. They're turning gravity up. And that means things are going to come down. And nobody knows how things will go. But the backdrop, Abby, that we're investing against is that easy money is turning off. And we want to, you know, bring things back to reality.
Yeah. And actually, you know, funny enough, you talked about the Fed's sort of reducing rates to sort of pump money into the economy when the flash crash in 2020 happened, right? March 2020. If you recall, a year before that, the Fed was actually on a rate, like a tightening, tightening sector. Mm-hmm. They were doing,
tightening program. Yeah.
Tightening program where they were raising rates, you know, 25 to 50 basis points. Not quarter over quarter, but pretty much almost every time there was an expected rate hike, it was sort of happening. And we saw the market sort of, you know, react accordingly. And people were asking, well, why is the Fed raising rates? And a reason that the Fed, you know, tends to raise rates is, let's say like another event occurs, let's say a recession happens or a black swan event occurs. If the rates are at zero, the Fed has no bullets, right, to do anything to sort of save the economy. Mm-hmm. So when in times of like prosperous economic growth, it does make sense to sort of just turn the heat down a little bit because you don't want the economy to overheat. So it is a good thing, right? It's not going to feel like a good thing when it does happen because like you said, equity markets are inversely correlated towards rate hikes. You will start seeing, or I don't know if you will, but history has shown that it will start pulling back a little bit, right? And you got to ask yourself why. Why does that happen? And I think, Manish, you and I were talking about that before. It's because, well, right now, you know, the equity markets traditionally are the only really way to – it's the only place where you can really invest, right? You're not going to invest in the fixed income markets. You're not really going to invest in bonds or debt right now because it was either negative yields or it was zero, right? You weren't getting any money or something very, very, very minimal. Mm-hmm. But as you start increasing rates, then, you know, the returns that those fixed income instruments pay start to go up, and it does make more sense for larger groups to sort of put money into. So, you know, as the rates are going up, equity markets go down, and now you're also competing with another market.
Yeah, the easiest way to think about it, you did a great job of laying it out. So like whatever that government bond rate is, that's the risk-free rate. So every other asset class is based on some spread above that. So if the government bond is 1%, then maybe a mortgage is, you know, 3%, let's call it, which means the real estate that you buy is at, you know, 4-5%, right? So there's a spread between sort of the, you know, the free rate and the mortgage rate, and there's a spread between what you borrow at and what you invest at, right? So those are the spreads. But as that risk-free rate goes from 1 to 2, then that mortgage rate probably goes, you know, from probably goes up a percentage as well. So it goes up to 4%. And then the underlying real estate doesn't trade at 4% anymore. It trades at 5%, right? And going from a 4% yield to a 5% yield, you know, that's like a 25% decline in price. Mm-hmm. If everything else stays the same, right? So just having, you know, most of my professional life, almost all of it, interest rates have been going down. And that has been a huge tailwind for equity markets across the board. Mm-hmm. Now living through, you know, we saw it very briefly to your point, Abby, in 19, yeah, when they started raising rates. And it was just a huge headwind for everything. But because of COVID, it went the other way. They dropped rates. And Jerome Powell actually said in 2020, we're not even thinking about raising interest rates, and we won't raise rates until 2023, right? But the program has been so successful at getting us back on track, mm-hmm, that, you know, they're reversing that and saying we're going to, you know, hike like crazy, right? So if they're to be believed and rates are going to go up 2% over 2 years, I mean, the reason we're spending so much time to talk about that right now is that, don't kid yourself, that is going to be a huge impact on markets. And we will feel that. Now, mm-hmm, what does that actually mean for cannabis? That's a little harder to say because, you know, we're not the high flying tech stocks that trade at, you know, 50 times revenue, 100 times revenue, right? Those are the ones who will get their multiples reeled in the most. But I think it's a little bit naive to assume that, you know, when the entire equity market is facing a headwind, and just technically there's more, you know, there's more of a pressure of outflow of money from the equity markets. I think it would be silly to think that we wouldn't be affected by that.
That we'd be immune to that. No, and we wouldn't. Yeah. Exactly. And, you know, even in the last, 3 years, 4 years that we've sort of have been investing in this, or the markets have been there, every time the broader market has pulled back, the cannabis market has followed, right? There's a pretty strong correlation between the two.
I would put an asterisk. I think it really depends, you know, depends on what's going on during the time frame. Sometimes, like I would say more recently, we have had that trend. But, you know, if you think back to 17, 18, 19, that was not necessarily true. But we were, to your point, we were more in speculative mania, mm-hmm, territory. But now I would say broadly that's true. I want to get to the point of, you know, why this is so strong in my mind right now. It's because I just want to reiterate again, nothing changes sentiment like price. We saw that again and again and again last year. Very, very important. And that's true for, you know, us as cannabis investors. That's true for the broader market generally. And I really learned that lesson throughout the pandemic in 2020 when, you know, lending markets and real estate markets kind of froze up in the middle of the pandemic. And the thing that got them moving again was when stocks started to go up again. When the stock market started to do well again, the real estate world kind of took their cues from that, oddly enough, and said, okay, well, I guess things are back to normal. I guess it's time to get back to work. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm, that's what the Fed realized. Look, if we can get the market moving again and get people making money again, then the human instincts will kick in and everything else will sort itself out, market-wise.
That's interesting. Go ahead. Well, no, I was going to use an example that I was like what I was going through during that time. And I just wanted to bounce it off you because you're a real estate guy and I can't believe I'm talking to you about this, but like, you know, I bought a condo in 2020, right? But I bought a pre-build and I bought it in like 2016, 2017, I can't remember, but it was when rates were going up.
Yep.
And so when they did the stress test on me, they stress test me at about 4.65%. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's what they thought that the mortgage rate was going to be. And I was like, oh, wow, that's a pretty high rate given that mortgage rates, or given that, you know, the US 10-year was at like basically like zero back, mm-hmm. or not zero, but like prime rates were at like zero at the time. And mm-hmm. the Fed was talking about raising rates. When 2020 happened, obviously we didn't raise rates. The exact opposite happened. We lowered rates. Mm-hmm. I thought that the real estate market got fueled because everybody was factoring in higher interest rates. Because the interest rates got lower, then the prices for real estate went up.
Oh, for sure. I mean, look, low rates helped everything, especially real estate, because we use so much leverage, right? Mm-hmm. That's part of it. But my point is, before, like in that kind of first couple months of the pandemic, like probably through the summer of it, a lot of the real estate deals, the market, at least the one that I'm in, the commercial market, were pretty frozen, just because. Okay. People weren't ready to make a big move, mm-hmm. and lenders were pretty standoffish about financing because they didn't know what was what.
Right.
But
right.
My point is, once the equity market started moving and you know, the animal and people are like, oh, we're making money again, then everyone else goes, well, we don't want to be left behind. We're going to make money too.
Right. FOMO so that, kicked in.
Yes. But to your point, as rates go down, that's a signal that, hey, this is probably going to benefit real estate equities and equities in general, because that's usually how the cycle works. Mm-hmm. Right. Right. So now we go the opposite way. So why I'm pointing this out is that in December of last year, you know, we got into tax loss selling. And I think, you know, the shorts were kind of closing out and pushing down hard to get that tax loss selling money in. And as the year ended, you know, we saw them cover some shorts cover a little bit. But coming into the new year, right, I was away on vacation, but I saw that kind of 1 or 2 days we had a couple really red days in the market. Mm-hmm. And the cannabis stocks got hammered. So the whole market was down maybe 1% to 2%. A lot of cannabis stocks were down 5% to 8%. Okay. And so, you know, I did a sentiment check, went online, just saw what the mood was. And it was horrible. Like people were, you know, basically saying we should investigate, you know, these guys and this is the worst industry ever and blah, blah, blah. By the end of the day, the market was down overall, but cannabis actually ended green. And we said, hey, I think something happened here today that hasn't happened in over a month. And that was that the ETF MSOS finally stepped back into the market to start buying again. Mm-hmm. So if you remember, Abby, you know, the Nancy Mace bill, a bunch of inflows of money, myself buying some some ill-advised options on MSOS. The short ones expired worthless, by the way.
Ill-advised by yourself.
Yeah, exactly. Ill-advised by me. And the MSOS had a huge inflow of capital, remember? And my theory at the time was, well, they're going to keep putting that back into, you know, the underlying assets, and that will keep the ETF afloat for at least a couple of weeks because they have so much cash, right? Mm-hmm. But they didn't. What they did was a different strategy. They decided to buy the NASDAQ-listed names, the ancillary names, and completely avoid the MSOs. And so the market went down. It went down quite a bit. And now they decided to get back into the market and accumulate again. So I think what you're seeing is that the you know, the guys running MSOS have figured out that it's obvious they move the market. It's obvious that, you know, they cause a lot of inefficiency in the price action. Mm-hmm. So I think they're trying to be smart and responsible about where and when and how they buy so that they don't mess up the market. They don't want to be the ones pushing the price up, you know, at the end of the day.
Right.
So now you see them pretty aggressively buying over the last 2 weeks. We're recording this on Sunday, Jan 16th. It'll come out on the 18th. Well, MSOS is basically out of cash. They're down to $20 million as of Friday. They had $80 million the week before. And, you know, they look to be showing that they're willing to spend all that money and get it all out the door. Okay. Mm-hmm. This is a very long way of getting to the fact that 2 weeks ago, I saw what happens when the broader market goes down 2%. And that was that our sector got pushed down as well, 5 to 8%. Mm-hmm. Right. Now, is that shorts fueling the fire? Is that just natural sellers selling, mix of the two? Who knows? Right. The point being, the last 2 weeks, we've had a relative amount of calm, kind of even boring in our sector because MSOS has kept us afloat. So now, Abby, we got to think about, and we'll see, what happens when MSOS, you know, runs out of cash, mm-hmm. and then we actually get back to having red days again in the broader markets and our stocks start going down again. Well, then I think the sentiment goes back to how it was at the end of December. People get angry, people get nasty, and people give up on the sector. And barring some like big M&A or some big sexy announcement that, you know, we're not going to, that could happen over the next few weeks, but barring something like that, I would just say, not a prediction, but something to watch out for and something to maybe keep some dry powder for is once MSOS runs dry and we start having red days, then we'll get a real gauge of how our sector will do on red days, you know, without MSOS there to support us.
For sure. For sure. And that's very, you know, that's interesting because I guess that's like the only capital that's sort of earmarked for our industry that's not really deployed, right? Now it looks like it's almost being not depleted, but it's getting close.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, you mentioned this big sexy announcement or anecdotally speaking, but it's like, you know, how big and how sexy does that announcement have to be, right? Like it's got to be something pretty meaningful.
Yeah, it's a good point, right? I mean, we've even seen like into the end of the year, we saw some small M&A deals get announced, right? Like,
yeah,
you know, Curaleaf buying a private operator, for example, and it's just not enough to move the needle, right? So you're right. Maybe something that's like public to public or like, you know, big company getting into new sexy state or something. Like who knows what it could be, right? But it, just barring that, it that's how the setup looks to me is that we have. At least, you know, looking out throughout this year, interest rates going up, equities being challenged, there's still a good amount of froth in this market, I think, that's vulnerable, right? We talked about NFTs earlier and speculative stuff like that. So that's kind of, to me, when you talk about the cycle and where we are in the cycle, that's the stuff that needs to, that's kind of the canary in the coal mine, right, of things pulling back. But so that's the backdrop. And people have been a little bit lulled into this false sense of security the last few weeks because of MSOS. Well, let's see what happens when they're no longer part of the picture. And that's why I would also say, like, for me personally, I've been putting some of my cash in, and we'll talk about that. But I've really only been buying, you know, a couple of things, and it's actually only stuff that's not included in MSOS. So it hasn't, and the stuff that I do have my eye on that's in MSOS, I'm just sort of waiting back for the next little while just to see how that plays out before putting, you know, that last part of money in.
More money into it. Nice.
So we'll see how that plays out. But that's just a very big picture, high level look. And also, you know, to talk about the industry and what we're hearing and seeing for Q4 and Q1, Q4 is looking quite soft. We said this in our predictions episode, but I just want to reiterate, I think Q4 is actually going to be worse than people think because Q3, I think people did some channel stuffing and managed the quarter because they knew that was going to be the last results for a while. So they kind of tried to manage it to make it not look so bad. But Q4, because it's going to be folded into the full year, I think, in fact, it's going to go the other way where people push a lot of negative stuff into Q4, you know, push their write-downs in, like really, really kind of jam it so that, you know, they kind of take their medicine in Q4, and by the time it comes out in March, they're already talking about how good Q1 is, right? They can give guidance for Q1 and sort of help appease the market a little bit.
Gotcha.
So that's what I think we're looking forward to, if you will.
Bad news, low capital, low trading volumes, and raising interest rates.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, look, it is what it is, right? Fight reality. Who knows, right?
Yeah, there might be some metaverse consumption lounge that gives you an NFT. So then we'll see some real price action happen.
And I mean, look, it's don't fight reality. I mean, you know, it's typically a losing fight, right? So all that being said, I mean, that's not a prediction of what can happen to the equity values of cannabis, right? I mean, they're not as cheap as they were at the end of the year. You know, they could easily go down, but I would just say this, like, everything is relatively attractive right now. If they go down further, they become sort of no-brainer attractive. Once you're getting down to like, you know, 6x EBITDA, sort of for, you know, 23, call it, I think those are levels that are really give you a lot of comfort as a buyer buying at those levels. So that, in a nutshell, Abby, is just quick kind of or long form notes about where the industry is heading. Now, let's talk a little bit just about COVID and how that could relate. You know, depending on where you are in the world, you know, we're seeing more lockdowns. You know, obviously Omicron's highly contagious. But I think the challenge a little bit right now is you have a fast spreading strain of COVID. You're doing lockdowns in some places, but because of all the concerns about inflation, I think stimulus is kind of dying out now. And this is, you know, you have to fight basically the effects of a lockdown, but you got to be more careful with stimulus as well.
Right. The money printer's not on as rigorously as it was before.
Right. And it's probably just turned down a little bit, but it's, you know, it's sort of going down, not up, right?
Yeah. And like, look, I know this isn't the COVID investing podcast, but, you know, I really hope this is the last lockdown. And if Omicron is showing anything, I think it was Bill Gates kind of came out and said he thinks like the next variant will be more, even milder and more like a seasonal flu. And that's sort of how we have to start treating it, right?
Yeah. And I think that's, like, you know, my prediction actually on this is that this is probably the pandemic ender. I think the fact that this thing is so contagious and people with, you know, three boosters are still getting it, it's like, okay, that kind of means that everybody's going to get it and everybody is getting it. And it's taking away a little bit, a lot actually, I think, the stigma of having COVID, where before, you know, and I can tell you certainly in Canada, if you got COVID, people did kind of look at you like, okay, what were you doing, right? What's the lifestyle you're living? Now you have people who are very safe who are catching it. And I think it takes away some of the, you know, the big deal of it, especially since it's milder. And I think the point I'm getting to is that I think this will be the last significant round of COVID lockdowns. I think by the time we get to the end of the year, I just, to your point, Abby, I think people are going to be like, treat it more like the flu, which, you know, we just deal with every year. We don't shut down our economy or track, you know, contact trace for flu cases and stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly. I'm with you, and I really hope that we're right on that. But it's funny that you were saying that you think this is going to be the COVID ender. And if you just listen to what you were saying about 10 minutes ago, it's like, hey, this is going to be the COVID ender. What you get to look forward to is raising interest rates, a receding equity market, and less capital in our sector.
Yeah, so yeah. Well,
it's not that roaring 20s COVID party that you and I were talking about way back then. You know, when this is all over, everyone's going to be out partying.
Yeah, that's right.
That's done now.
That's right. Well, they say the bill comes at the end. So, you know, for this huge capital markets party that we've had in 2020 and 2021, you know, we got to take our medicine now. And that doesn't mean it has to be a huge collapse. But you just think about, like, the S&P went up 27% last year. Right? That is a really high benchmark. And, you know, for it to trade sideways or down, you know, 5 to 10% doesn't sound that crazy. And in fact, it's probably healthy, right? So when we talk about COVID and the stimulus and all the impacts that it's had, a lot of what's happened is capital has gone into helping businesses survive, right? And you see that a lot in the Canadian cannabis sector, where some of these companies have really benefited from the government's, you know, free money, essentially.
Yeah, they kick the can like longer down the road, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you know, we talked about this before, and it's nothing like prior to March 2020, all the issues that were there, most of the issues are still there, right? Like the inflation, raising rates, all that's coming back. And so if you recall, you know, I think it was even in October or November 2019, I would talk about a lot was inverted yield curve and indicating a recession and a pullback. And obviously it kind of happened, but it didn't happen. But all those issues that sort of led up to those comments and to what happened with the yield curve, they're still happening today, right?
Yeah. And if you think about, you know, the cycle of recessions and what happens, typically you have you have a boom and then you have a bust. And what happens in the bust is you clean up a lot of the excesses of the boom time, right? So companies go under, supply of things gets rationalized, you know, then there's less companies competing and that raises, you know, the ability to raise prices so they make more money. And then that, you know, out of the ashes comes the phoenix again, right?
So
that's the whole cycle, right? But if you think about COVID and what happened, we didn't really have that. Like, sure, of course, some businesses died out, but for the most part, you know, in North American economies where there was all this free money, most of these things didn't really happen. There wasn't a lot of defaulting and cleaning up and whatnot, right? If anything, you know, maybe we had new kind of excesses born out of the easy money. Mm-hmm. So that needs to all get figured out now, right? We need to go through this now and figure out, you know, what is the way forward, right? So all of this is to say, and I don't want to get too caught up in the macro, but the number one thing that we should think about from a macro perspective is rates and inflows and outflows of capital. Mm-hmm. So just understand as we enter this year and probably the year after, this is a tailwind is now becoming a headwind, which is a concern. The flip side, I'll just say briefly, is that a lot of people believe that there's just so much debt in the world and the average person has so much, you know, debt that there is no ability to raise rates 2%. You'll raise them, you know, some of the way, and then there'll be too much pain being felt and they'll have to let people breathe.
Yeah, and it's important to note that it's not like the Fed's going to snap their finger and the rates are going to go up 2%, right? They raise it gradually. Mm-hmm. So they'll raise it by 25 basis points or 50 basis points.
They'll do 25 at a time.
Yeah, and then from there they'll check the temperature of the economy of what's going on, and then see if it can handle more. Right, we saw that happen in late 2019.
Yeah, that's fair. But I mean, this time they're because they're fighting inflation. I think they're kind of clearly putting in that this is our path. Like they're trying to put out a really aggressive path to try to get ahead of it. But some people are saying they're just same way they said, we're not going to think about raising rates till 23 because that inspired a lot of confidence to get people going. Now they're like, okay, that was then, this is now, right? Now we're changing our mind, right? So that's kind of the other side of the argument is people think that they're saying this, but they're not going to be able to actually raise rates that much, right? So that's something to be aware of as well. Okay, let's talk about market-specific news. So the first thing I think that could be fun to talk about, Abby, is New York. So Ascend, which, you know, it's one of my largest positions, I'm a big holder of. They had a deal with MedMen to buy the New York license for $73 million. That deal, they got regulatory approval right at the end of the year, which I believe was what they needed to do. And then MedMen basically said, no, we're not closing. You know, you didn't fulfill your closing conditions, and we don't want to do the deal anymore, right? Mm-hmm. So here's the best metaphor I have for this, okay? Let's say you're selling your house, and your house is $1 million, right? And for whatever reason, you agree to do a long closing with somebody. So instead of closing your house in 30 or 60 days, you're going to close your house 9 months from now, okay? And between now and closing, the value of your house goes from the $1 million you originally were selling for to a value of $2 million, right? You might understandably want to break the contract, right? And say, no, I want out, you know, my house is worth $2 million now. There's no way I'm selling it to you for $1 million, right? Well, if the contract is firm, what we call firm, that means it's, you know, definitive or doesn't have, you know, has no conditions basically, or the conditions have been fulfilled. You can't really get out of the contract. Okay. Mm-hmm. But come closing time, you still need to process documents. Your lawyer needs to process documents to complete the sale. So if you say no, too bad, screw you, the deal can't close without your cooperation. Mm-hmm. Okay. But, you know, that's why we have courts. So if you can't close a deal because the vendor's not cooperating, you go to court and you ask for what's called specific performance, and you say, I need the vendor to perform as per this agreement. I did everything correct. And, you know,
right.
And it takes time, but it gets resolved. Okay. So now we apply this to the New York license. And instead of, you know, the house being worth $1 million, it was being purchased for $73 million. Mm-hmm. And instead of doubling, you know, to $2 million, the value of that license is probably more like $273 million.
Right.
Which just goes to show you like how fast things change, right? Mm-hmm. Because remember that license sold at auction, and it wasn't like Ascend was the only purchaser. I mean, Trulieve missed it. Verano missed it. I mean, shame on both those companies. And now they'll have to pay a multiple of that $73 million to get into New York, right? Mm-hmm. So it's very obvious why MedMen and the new ownership at MedMen does not want to close this deal.
Right.
Right. This is why we have courts. So, you know, my guess, and again, I'm biased, I'm an Ascend holder, but I'm trying to just call it how I see it. My guess is that Ascend is in the right, you know, based on, mm-hmm. you know, the documents they've put out there and based on the quotes, by the way, from the Office of Cannabis Management, they got the approval. MedMen said you didn't get the approval, but it's clear they did. So they got to go to court to try to, you know, get this done now. Mm-hmm. How long will this drag out? Who knows? You know, how can it be resolved? Who knows? What's MedMen's angle? I mean, I think they're just, I think they're thinking, look, there's, if we close this deal, like, you know, if we don't, if we try to put up a fight, at least we can put ourselves in a position where they might settle and give us more money.
Right.
Right. I mean, I got to think that's their angle here because New York State is not going to give them approval on turning over to adult use because they just pissed off the regulators.
Mm-hmm. That's true. I didn't even think about that. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this is all the stuff that, you know, like, you know, it's not just as simple as a license, right? You actually need help from the regulators. So they can't sell it because the regulator's not going to approve it. They can't go adult use because the regulator's not going to approve it. So all they can do is drag this out and make it painful for Ascend, and maybe Ascend pays them a little bit more to close it. But on the other hand, I mean, like, you know, anyone who knows Abner, like, that's not the guy to play chicken with. So,
oh God, no.
Yeah. So, I mean, both sides of this are, let's just say, you know, pretty stubborn. So I would grab your popcorn because either way, this will be very entertaining. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, this is my prediction. I think you will see Ascend get this license. What I don't know is how long it will take and you know,
what they'll end up paying in the end.
Yeah. I mean, look, they're going to push from a court perspective for just specific performance, right? We see that happen in real estate all the time. And it could very well get done that way, right? But I don't know. I don't know the process. I don't know how long it's going to take. So obviously not good for them. They just want to close the deal. But ultimately, I think it is inevitable.
Right.
And by the way, this hasn't really come up yet, and we haven't seen this yet. But, you know, it's one thing for the new owners of MedMen who are, you know, pretty entrepreneurial people to do this, you know, to go to bat and fight and whatever. But, you know, one of the biggest backers now of MedMen is Tilray. I mean, Tilray has publicly stated they want to buy that operation. So at some point, somebody's going to go to Irwin at Tilray and say, hey, what's the deal with your, you know, essentially Tilray USA, which is MedMen, right, behaving in this fashion. Did you guys approve this? Did you guys know about this?
Because right.
You're the largest note holder at MedMen. So if they did this without your permission, or without your knowledge, that seems like a problem. And if they did this with your knowledge, which is likely true, then you know, why did you allow them to do this? And this is how Tilray would conduct itself in the US, right?
Right.
So I think it's a messy process. From an optics perspective, I you know, MedMen, who cares? For them, who cares? Because their name is already dirt. But like, there's not much lower the MedMen brand can sort of go. It's all up from here. But for Tilray, I think it could become a little stickier. I don't know if they've accounted for that. I don't know if the analyst community has sort of like picked up on that, because there was like a 2-hour Tilray call, which I did not listen to, but I just skimmed the transcript and nobody asked them about New York. So funny, actually, I searched the transcript for New York and it came up as, you know, that's where the company's headquartered. So the press release is like, you know, said comes from New York, right?
Yeah.
But like, look, if you're a compliance and regulatory focused company trading on the NASDAQ, like, hey, you know, are you comfortable with your USA company essentially conducting itself like this? So mm-hmm. It'll be interesting to see how all this plays out.
Mm-hmm.
So that's it for New York. I mean, you know, one of the negatives, I don't know if we talked about, but New Jersey is looking like it's going to get further delayed. For its rollout. So kind of looking now more like Q2, and maybe it's, you know, even late Q2 or summertime. So New York, similarly, is I'm hearing that it will be like
delayed as well. Yeah.
We were hoping for beginning of 23. I'm hearing some people say mid 23. I'm hearing some people now talk about, you know, 24. So, again, nobody knows. But I mean, that is at least good news for Ascend in terms of if the New York program was starting tomorrow, that would put a lot more pressure on them. If it takes them, you know, if they can get this solved in a year, it's actually not that bad for them if the program gets delayed, then it's to their benefit. So we'll see.
Yeah. And then I said, and just to go back to one topic we talked about earlier, that kind of ties in, but how we were just saying, hey, there's boredom in the industry, more or less, right? Mm-hmm. This kind of fuels to it. It's like, hey, like, you know, New Jersey's getting delayed, New York's getting delayed. Those states were supposed to, you know, those states were very exciting, like totally. A little while back. And now totally. It's like, oh God, they're getting delayed again, right?
Yep.
And it's just going to add, I mean, look, listen, we can talk about this on another episode, but I'm saying it's just going to add to like their black market, and, you know, it's going to add more like challenges later when they do come online. This is just something that I'm anticipating. But man, it would have been really nice to see New York or New Jersey just sort of stick to their schedule this year, right? That could have been the catalyst that we needed.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look, ultimately the New Jersey thing is coming, right? It's just a matter of when. But I agree with you. Like, as it gets delayed.
Yeah, but you could say that with New York too.
I mean, I would say that with New York, honestly. Yeah. But it's like, it's just delayed, delayed, delayed. So it's like, you know, it's fatigue. Investors get fatigued. They're getting bored. They're getting frustrated. And, you know, when everything is going up, you know, certainly it feels like
everything's imminent, you know?
Yeah, things happen all that fast.
Yeah, when you've got all that price action happening, you're like, oh, New York's going to come online. It's going to happen in 2023. It's around the corner. We got to invest now. Now it's like, when things are down and low, it's like, it's like it could be like 2024 now. And anyways, just sort of adds to it.
Yeah, I totally agree, right? And actually, I was talking more about the broader market, like that going back to Alan Brockstein's analogy of it being a casino. Mm-hmm. When everyone's making money and the casino's paying out, everyone's having a good time. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I don't know if you've ever been at a blackjack table when the dealer keeps winning and everyone at the table is losing money. It's not a good feeling. You know, it the door flips pretty fast. And that unfortunately feels to me like the setup for 2022 in equities, that headwind of rising interest rates, you know, it to Abby's point, it hurts the whole market and people get, you know, there's not that excitement anymore. And you know, for us, the delays, those don't seem to be helping, right?
Right.
That's unfortunate for our industry. But on the flip side, I say, yeah, but nothing's really changed. I mean, when that market comes online, it's going to be a monster market. I mean, the little silver lining is, hey, at least those operators are building up inventory and they'll be able to have, you know, a more robust launch when it does launch. Mm-hmm. But you know, until it's right on our doorstep, until it's really happening, it's hard to get too excited about it.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So speaking about excitement and, you know, sentiment, you know, there's a company we've talked about a few times in passing on the podcast, and that company is AgriFi, okay? So I want to talk about it a little bit today for a couple of reasons. But so I'll just first off start by saying, you know, Abby, you obviously know this, but I've done a lot of work on this company. I've discussed it with a lot of people. I've talked to people in the industry about it. I've visited some of their facilities. It's become a very big position of mine. But the reason I haven't talked a lot about it here is because it's a very speculative position. So unlike a lot of the MSOs that we look at that have like these limited license and these established business models, this company has a lot to prove. So it's really more in the concept stage, which means by, you know, definition, it could end up being a zero because, you know, it could not prove out what it's supposed to do, right? Obviously, I don't think that because I've purchased a lot of it, but that's why, you know, we haven't talked about it that much here because it's something we're constantly trying to figure out. So the reason I'm talking about today is, you know, over the break, we saw a short report and the short report really decimated the stock. And so for me personally, I think this is actually one of my strong suits is being able to kind of go through a short report when it wrecks a stock and parse out, hey, what is true? What is misleading? What do I already know? What is new information?
And what's exaggerated?
Exactly. But most importantly, boil it down to sort of the basics and say, does this sort of ruin the narrative or ruin my perception of the future of the company? Or ultimately, will it overcome this? And where it's trading today, is it pricing in the risks or, you know, are the risks too big to overcome?
Mm-hmm.
So just to give you an example, I mean, some of the stocks we've seen have short reports in our industry that kind of shrugged it off and kept going. I mean, Trulieve had a short report. I think back in late 2019, GrowGen had a short report. IIPR had a short report.
And now AgriFi on the NASDAQ has had a short report, right? So keep in mind when you're on the NASDAQ, you know, you get liquidity, but you give liquidity too. So it's easier for people to, you know, write puts and short stocks and stuff like that. So it does go both ways. So ultimately, you know, without going through a point by point, Abby, I mean, to me, the short report basically just mapped out a bunch of stuff that personally I mostly already knew, that talks about the fact that, you know, the company is still very early stage and a lot of its technology is unproven, right? Now, the report talks about the fact that some of their partners don't actually have licenses and it makes them sound like they're maybe not real. That, in my opinion, is just not true. A mm-hmm. lot of the companies don't have licenses, you know, until they get to the very final stage of getting a license, right?
Right.
But you can have a building, you can, you know, be pre-approved and all that stuff, but until you actually get to the final stage, you don't have that license. So
yeah, and I feel like a lot of cannabis investors are pretty comfortable investing pre-licensed, right? Like you and I have both invested in companies pre-licensed, so.
Yeah, I mean, look, I don't love investing pre-licensed. My point is just that the way it was set up is to say that, hey, this company doesn't have a license. It's not real. It's all a sham, mm-hmm. right? But that's not really fair. The question is, like, that to me is more misleading than reality. But also it's good to know, right? If a company is – if it's being presented as having a license and being operational and they don't, then that's different. You get what I'm saying?
I 100% understand what you're saying.
Okay. So all of this is to say that – to bring it to conclusion is that with AgriFi – to me, it's like still a speculative name, although now it has, you know, that those extraction businesses. But if I'm going to invest in something speculative that, you know, could be a zero, that is a technology or something that needs to be proven out, I would rather buy it cheaply, you know, when it's trading at a very low valuation, because if it works, it's still a multi-bagger. If it works, it's more of a multi-bagger. If it doesn't work, it can still only go to zero.
Right.
So my at-risk capital has the same amount of downside, but now has more upside.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a name that's, you know, doesn't really have anything to do with MSOS. It goes down with the rest of the market when the rest of the market goes down. Certainly there's a lot of shorts, I think, pushing it down right now. Yeah. So the point of all, and by the way, is a company that has, I think, over $75 million of cash as of the last quarter. Mm-hmm. So it's not going anywhere anytime soon. So all of those things, plus what I already see, is this is why it's actually becoming a bigger position for me. But, you know, once it rallies again, and I think it will, then the stuff I'm buying today, I might end up, you know, the block that I'm buying today, I might end up selling and moving it towards, you know, some kind of plant touching MSO, depending on what's going on at that time.
Right, right. There was one other thing about AgriFi. Mm-hmm. You know, when you and I we've talked about it extensively offline, and one of the things that I really liked, one of the reasons that you got into it was because it was not a hedge, but it was sort of a hedge for you. If, hey, let's say uplisting legalization doesn't happen when we anticipated to, you know, this is a stock that could still benefit indirectly, right? So when you were coming in, that was one of the factors that you were sort of taking into consideration. Now, has that changed since reading this short report?
No, not at all. So I think what the short report did well, and mm-hmm. again, I give them credit because they did good research. They laid out what the basic sort of tug of war is with AgriFi, which is that it sounds great. It's a really interesting concept. What it's promising is to deliver, you know, better quality and consistency to the industry, which is a real problem.
Yeah, and better data.
Better data, that's huge. Yeah, the software component of it. Yeah, and Abby, what I really loved about it was the fact that you have a big board name, NASDAQ Capital, that had the ability to sort of indirectly invest in and get the economics of, you know, the underlying businesses. So similar to how IIPR raised money on the NASDAQ and then purchased facilities, you know, from the big MSOs, that is similar to what AgriFi was doing. The difference is, you know, IIPR did it for a fixed return, you know, getting 10, 11, 12% in rent on, you know, the buildings they purchased.
Right.
Well, ultimately, we know those rates are going down. So they're fixed and then they're only going down, right? With AgriFi, you know, they're getting $1 per pound of wholesale. So if the technology does what they say it does and they're able to produce good quality cannabis for, you know, their operator partners, then they're going to be able to get a huge part of the economics without having to pay for, you know, the labor, and without having to pay 280E, and without having to pay, you know, the rent. So that's what I really liked about the setup and the system, mm-hmm. right? The fact that, you know, to your point, this was a hedge against slow uplisting. The longer uplisting takes, the more these guys are able to take their currency and invest it in the industry. And if like JP's saying, you know, SAFE doesn't happen this year, it doesn't happen next year, and it's more of a 2024 story, well, by that time, you know, a company like AgriFi could have built out a huge base of operators and could be making, you know, a huge amount of money on that cultivation.
Right.
Right. And they're going to be so far ahead of anybody sort of copying that model. Because by the way, like, we won't actually see the results of their model probably closer till the end of this year, right? When they have more of their operators come online. So it's not a tomorrow story necessarily, although because it's on the NASDAQ, it could easily bounce tomorrow if they have some good news. But that's essentially what I liked about it. I like the technology. I like that, you know, where it's heading. But what really sold me was that NASDAQ capital, plant touching operators, and not a fixed return, being able to get dollar per wholesale.
Gotcha. And after reading that short report, you're like, hey, all that's still intact.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely talked to the company about the issues, you know, went through a bunch of that stuff myself and kind of picked through it. Not to say it's all wrong. I mean, again, I think they identified the core issue very well, which is that, you know, if you just read sort of the promotional materials, it seems like all of, you know, this company's a done deal and it's going to be generating, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars, right? But what they pointed out very well was that it's still early stage. These things have to be proven out. They have to be built out. And a lot of their revenue, almost all their revenue right now, comes from the construction of these projects, right? And hey, that doesn't actually mean anything because the projects still have to work and be viable. Right. So that I think they laid out the problem very well. Right. I think they probably brought to light some issues that even I missed. But overall, it didn't change how I felt about these things. But the lower price, I like the risk reward, because to me, the risk hasn't changed, but the reward has gotten bigger at a lower price.
Right. Exactly.
So to be specific, under $10 at the $8-$9 range, I've been buying it, you know, pretty healthily. Doesn't mean you should, by the way. I could always be wrong, but that's just where my mindset's at today on that one. And you know, once it recovers, you know, I'll probably trim some, but it's still a very overweight position for me for all of those reasons.
Makes sense.
Okay. Lastly, I mean, I think just to kind of close it off, it might be good just to talk about, Abby, sort of how we see the, you know, things that we're prepared for kind of going into the end of the year. I mean, beginning of the year, right? Yeah, sorry. And I think it's really where we're standing today, more of the same. I mean, we got to look at the fundamentals. We have to look at the technicals, but technicals, I think, from a macro perspective of money in, money out, where's the money headed? And overall, I would just say that, you know, there's definitely some chop ahead of us. There's, you know, maybe we should all put on the mentality that SAFE is not going to happen this year, right? And you know, what that could mean for our portfolios. But ultimately, I think once you see some of these new states turning online, and once I think you see the conversation shift towards Pennsylvania, Maryland, Ohio, and 2022 ballot measures, I do think there is exciting stuff that's going to come over this year. You might just have to be patient and have a strong stomach, you know, to balance out some of the negatives that we deal with in the macro.
And it's also good to note, you know, we talked about it quite extensively in this episode, is that, you know, our industry is not immune to what happens in the macro. So it is worthy of paying attention to quite closely at this stage, I'd say.
Absolutely. Abby, any final thoughts for people on the, you know, the start of the year kickoff episode here? Nothing has changed.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great title, right? Nothing has changed. You know, in terms of final thoughts, I think we've covered quite a bit of it. I think, you know, there is one thing we didn't really talk about. We used to talk about this quite extensively, and especially now that I'm seeing the parallels between pre-March 2020 to now in terms of the markets, you know, burn rates and cash positions, as well as underlying businesses, is going to be more and more important, because as these rates go up, the ability to raise capital is just going to become that much more difficult. Yeah. Not to say that it hasn't been in the last 9 months. You know, we haven't really seen any large capital markets like raises, but
equity
like,
raises, not at all. Yeah,
exactly. And so, I mean, you know, if we, like, notwithstanding the top players, there are still some companies that are cash strapped who won't be able to tap into those markets. And, you know, Manish, you alluded to it earlier on, where there needed to be a day of reckoning, which never really happened with COVID. The can got pushed down the line. That day's still coming, right? And so some of those companies that were just getting by, hoping for something better, you know, the bill is here, and they might not be able to pay.
It's a good point, right? And I think, I mean, what you reiterated, you know, high grading your portfolio, looking at, you know, sort of what you hold and how it could survive. And then also, like, you know, in that sort of environment, you know, I am willing to play with smaller names, but only if they're priced appropriately, right? So there needs to be a significant discount if you're buying a smaller operator or smaller company or a more speculative company. Mm-hmm. You need to be getting a greater margin of safety compared to, you know, buying a big operator, which is cash flow positive and self-funding, right? I mean, those are two very different businesses. They should be priced differently. And I think that matters more now than ever when you're going into a, you know, a harsher kind of macro market. So all things to think about. We'll leave it off there, guys. Thanks so much for listening. Happy New Year to everybody. Nothing has changed. And we'll see you next time.
This podcast is a general communication and entertainment being provided for informational purposes only. It is educational in nature and not designed to be a recommendation for any specific investment product, strategy, plan, feature, or other purposes. Any examples used in this podcast are generic, hypothetical, and for entertainment purposes only. None of Cannabis Investing Network or its affiliates are suggesting that the listener or any other person take a specific course of action or any action at all. Communications such as this are not impartial and are provided in connection with advertising and marketing of products and services. Prior to making any investment or financial decisions, an investor should seek individualized advice from a personal financial, legal, tax, and other professional advisor that take into account all of the particular facts and circumstances for an investor's own situation. By listening to this communication, you agree with the intended purpose described earlier. Opinions and statements of financial market trends that are based on current market conditions constitute our judgment and are subject to change without notice. We believe the information provided here is reliable, but should not be assumed to be accurate or complete. The views and strategies described may not be suitable for all investors.